part of a human experience. And I don't understand why is it that we are not okay talking about it. And I don't understand why we're not okay allowing other people to talk about it or not to talk about it. Because if sometimes you, all you need to do is to be quiet. I think grief needs to be witnessed.
Kia ora and welcome to The C Word. We're your hosts, Helen King.
And Belinda Chan-Lawrence.
If you like what you hear today, please subscribe to us on iTunes or follow us on Spotify. So we're back in Planet FM. Feels like a very long time since I've sat in here. I had no idea what my passwords were, but yeah, back in the studio, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, you guys are back with the COVID screen.
Yes, that's right. We have our confessional today. It is very odd. So we have a very special guest joining us for today's episode. So we have Aucklander Tatiana Hautori. So Tatiana started writing a blog, Crazy Grief, which has now turned into a podcast. So you can find that on all the major platforms. So do go and listen to it. And it came out of a experience that no one really wants to go through. Tatiana's husband, Jason, died suddenly, and this left her in an enormous amount of grief. And to deal with that, you started blogging and writing and trying to move through those feelings, which has produced this amazing, you know, resource of work, I think. So I think where it'd be great to start with is sort of go back and talk about finding an outlet for that grief.
Okay. Well, initially I wasn't really thinking about finding an outlet. What happened was Jason passed away on the 9th of May, 2017. And I'm originally from Brazil, so I'm really far away from all my family. I have a sister that lives in Japan. Everybody else from my family lives in Brazil. We have really close friends in the U.S. where we used to live, and Australia as well. And I have lots of amazing friends here. So probably about 3 weeks after Jason passed away, I was in a very terrible place. And I was getting phone calls all the time from my family and friends in Brazil and my sister in Japan and people in the States, and I just couldn't answer. I couldn't answer the phone. I couldn't reply to texts. Everything was just way too much. And then one night I had both of my girls, I have two daughters, and they were both sleeping in my bed. I was in the middle and I couldn't sleep, you know, as you do when you're struck by grief. You're wide awake in the middle of the night, worrying about what is going on, trying to figure things out in your head. Nothing makes sense. And then there was, you know, this urge, I need to let my family know that I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Because they are freaking out in Brazil. They are saying, hop on a plane and come here. We're going to look after you. And I knew that that was not the right thing to do. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go on Facebook and I'm going to write a very sanitized, a very lovely post saying to everybody, thank you so much for your condolences. You know, the girls and I are fine. Big lie. Big, big lie. I was just going to say, you know, we are fine and we are going to get through this. And I carefully thought about what I was going to say, because number one, I didn't want my mom to continue freaking out and my whole family just putting a lot of pressure on me to go to Brazil. And I kind of wanted them to just back off. And I wanted to do that in a nice way. So I opened up Facebook and I never realized that Facebook asks this question, what's in your mind? And that was the very first time that I saw that before you write a post. Because before I just went there, I posted a photo, I wrote something, I never paid attention. And that question really struck me. And for a long time, the cursor was blinking there, and I did not know what to write. And I forgot everything that I planned to write, you know, all the niceties that were just really not true. And I start asking myself, what is on my mind? And that was my very first time that I wrote. And I wrote this post talking really candidly about what was on my mind. And I didn't edit. I just posted it. And I closed the computer, and I fell asleep. And I realized something the next day, which was writing was a little bit like when you feel sick and you throw up. And then you feel better for a little bit. You know, you're still not cured, but you just are not that nauseous anymore for a little bit. Yes. And so, and then I did it again.
That is a very interesting analogy, I have to say. That
Isn't it? I love it. Throwing up on the page, right? Yes. And so I did that, and that became an outlet for me. So I would go on Facebook and throw up on a page and then close the computer, and I would not read what people wrote. I did not engage. It was a one-way conversation. And from that, I start getting lots and lots and lots of messages and people asking me, can I send this to my mother because my brother passed away? Can I send this to my friend because she lost her husband and somebody else got divorced? And I couldn't understand why is it that my experience was relatable to other people. But nonetheless, it was. Mm. And it was a big surprise for me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think what is relatable and what I've related to when I've listened to your podcast or when I've read the posts or read what you've written is that grief is a universal experience. You know, it is because loss is a part of life. I feel like in a lot of cultures or even, you know, a lot of families and things, we don't know how to process it. We don't know how to talk about it freely. But the one thing I think that you've pointed out, which is certainly very true of my experience of some of the things that happened in the past few years, is that we do not allow people to grieve.
Oh, yeah.
But not only that, we don't allow them to grieve in the way they need to.
Yes, most definitely. Yeah.
I would definitely agree with that. And I think also when you're talking about waking up in the middle of the night and your initial thought was about reassuring others. Mm. You had to let your family know that you were okay. You had to let people know, probably partly because you didn't want them hopping on a plane. And
back off, everybody.
Yeah. Yes.
But also, I think we, even in our times, in our very deepest times of grief, I don't know whether it's as women or as mothers, but we do have that sense that we still want to care for others. You were wanting to care for your family. You were wanting them to not worry. And your primary thought was about them. But in actual fact, worrying about other people means that it's very hard for us to have our own space, mm-hmm. to grieve in a way that fits with us.
Yes.
And when I was reading your blog, the bit that stood out to me more than anything else was when you said you talk to people and suddenly everyone started giving you advice.
Oh, because yes, unsolicited advice, and grief comes.
Does it, don't they?
yeah, all the time. So I think there were three things here that we just spoke that I want to mention. One of them is about allowing ourselves to grieve. We do not allow ourselves to grieve for several reasons, I think. And those are personal reasons, but I think for women especially is because we do have the tendency to want everybody around us to be okay. And because we're really seeking connections with everything that we do not want to sever the connection by being rude or by by really speaking our truth in the moment with authenticity, mm-hmm. We hold back a lot. We have been conditioned to do that. Mm-hmm. So in the moments of the stress, we become the babysitters of other people's emotions. And that's not a good place to be when you cannot even hold your own self. When you are grieving, and I realize this for myself, I had to choose to disappoint other people so that I could trust the only person that could hold that grief with me, which was me. Nobody else would be able to grieve my husband the way that I needed to grieve my husband. And then I had to make a very clear decision, which was, I am listening to all this advice, and they are very well-meaning advice. People that came to talk to me, they loved me. They loved my kids. They had a relationship with me and Jason, and they didn't want to see me suffering. But guess what? I was suffering. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they didn't want that to happen didn't matter, because mm-hmm. my husband died. Mm-hmm. And so allowing people that are suffering to suffer without coming to them and saying, oh, you're wallowing in your pity. And I remember saying to a friend of mine, yes, I am. And guess what? This is a pity party for one. You're not invited. So I had to decide that I was going to hold my grief.
Yeah.
And all the advice that people were giving me, I had to kind of really sift through it and go, what do I want to do with all of this? And the number one thing that I came to was, I don't actually even want to listen. Mm. And that's a bold, bold thing to do, because up to that point, I was kind of like the penguins of Madagascar. Have you seen that movie? It's like, smile and wave, boys, you know? And so people would say dumb things to me, and I would just smile and say thank you. And I just went, no, because this is not me being authentic. And authenticity is really important to me.
Yeah.
So I need to be authentic. And I start being the person that was like, you know what? What you're saying is actually not helpful. And people were not prepared for that.
No. Oh, my goodness. No.
We're very polite in our society. We talked about this on our last podcast, didn't we, Helen?
Yeah.
We should do a survey and see if it's correct. But I think we're pretty repressed quite often. And we're not used to people saying exactly what they think, because we don't do that.
Yeah, and then comes a Brazilian that loses her husband, and then's like, OMG, what do we do with that? She's out of control. And I had friends saying that to me, you know, you're out of control. And I'm like, yes, I am. My husband is dead.
Yeah.
And I am out of control. You have no idea how out of control I am. You only see one part of me being snappy at you. I'm not here to babysit your emotions. I can hardly hold my own. So, yeah, chaos is being unleashed, my friend, because grief does that to you.
Yeah. I love that. And I,
Yeah.
Don't you think, Belinda, that it ties into so much when you've been through cancer and things? Because I feel when you've had cancer that there's almost like this expectation that you need to be the happy camper, the happy cancer patient.
Oh, yeah, the survivor, the yeah. one that is, you know, keeping a good positive attitude.
Yeah, yeah. And
are we allowed to swear?
Yes.
Okay, so fuck that.
Yeah. We do.
Yeah.
It's just because I think, actually, no, I'm really mad some days that this has happened. Or, you know, we're in the midst of chemo, when your body feels so decimated by, you know, all the drugs, and your, you know, life feels so, chaotic and uncertain. And there's this sense of loss of, you know, life before. But people, give you the most outrageous pieces mm-hmm. of advice mm-hmm. that to, you know, be positive. And it's like, what's wrong with me being a bit negative right now? What, you know, can I just sort of process this myself in the way that feels right to me? Because I think we're entitled to our anger and loss when something like that has happened.
Yeah. But anger is not an emotion that we allow ourselves to to be okay with, because we have been conditioned to believe that anger is a bad emotion. Mm. I don't believe that there's such a thing as a bad emotion. I believe emotions are there to point to something that is bigger and deeper in us. And anger, fear, it's all part of being a human being that is struggling to come to terms with what is. Because your life was one before cancer, one before the death of your husband, one before the accident, one before the breakup, and now it's another life that doesn't fit. Your skin doesn't fit into this new life. So of course you're going to be angry, and of course you're going to be afraid, and of course there will be some days that you're going to accept things for 5 minutes, and then you're going to raise your fist to heavens and say, why me, and all of that. And I think that when we start making peace for ourselves, that this is what it is, it becomes so much lighter to carry that burden, because then what other people think really is none of our concern. And they are going to give advice. Unsolicited advice is going to happen. But then what is it that we do? I chose to be really upfront. I wanted to be kind, because kindness is one of my core values. And so, but I also wanted to be honest. And when people would say to me, you know, Jason is in a better place. And I'm like, yeah. Or, you know, don't worry, you're going to marry again. Or, I don't know, such dumb shit.
Did you punch them?
No, I didn't, but I wanted to. But what I did say, what I decided to do was, like, how can I be the most honest and the most kind person in certain moments like that without disappointing myself? And that was hard. I had to navigate that. And I became Miss Sassy Mouth, you know, and I would be just like, you know, what you just said is really dumb. And I actually don't appreciate you saying that. Because, and people are not used to be called out like that, you know. And so I remember somebody saying to me, well, I feel really offended because I gave you some good advice. And I'm like, well, I feel really offended because I didn't ask. And so the day you bury your husband, then you can come here and give me all the advice you want. Until then, you should shut your mouth. So let's just say that person is not my friend anymore, right?
Tatiana, I love you. Can you just, like, come and live in my house? I want your voice to be able to, like, follow me and say those things in your cool Brazilian accent, because it sounds better than when I say it. But listening to you, it just, oh my gosh, I wish all women were more like this, because it's just such an incredibly powerful narrative of going, and you're talking about the tension of trying to marry that with still being kind. But I would challenge you to think about, you are being kind. You're being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, that's exactly where your kindness needs to go at that point in time. We all need to be a heck of a lot kinder to ourselves and give ourselves permission to give ourselves what we want and what we need. And this is a huge thread that seems to be going through all our podcasts at the moment.
It does.
I think maybe there's a lesson for Helen and I ourselves in there.
Yeah, because
you go. I've got something I want to share after you go.
Because I was thinking on the way into the studio this evening, and you know, I read something on one of my favorite Instagram accounts. It's a woman in the States. She's African-American, and she runs something called the NAP Ministry. And it is very much about, especially for African-American people, that napping is a form of resistance and anti sort of capitalism, because the idea that, you know, that grind culture and stuff. But she posted something about the fact that none of us, and I think that's very true of New Zealand at the moment, none of us are admitting or acknowledging how huge what we're going through at the moment is. like it's almost like people are in the denial phase of that we're going through this huge collective loss because COVID has really spun everything, you know, around and made things feel quite sort of, you know, uncertain and all those sorts of things. And I was thinking as I was coming in here that it makes it really hard to sort of, it makes it really hard to be honest about your feelings because I haven't been doing very well, and I have found the last lockdown really, really challenging. But it's very hard to articulate that because no one is talking about how hard COVID has been on everyone.
Yeah, and I think that picking up on what you're saying, one of the things that I think it's happening for us is there's this great awakening. People are awakening for something that is deeper. Their spirituality is evolving at such a rapid, just really fast. People are just catching up on, oh my God, I need to wake up. Mm. And it's, if you think about COVID, if you think about cancer, if you think about a loved one dying, those are the times when you're shaken to your core. Mm. And in those times, you have this choice of, do I continue in the same way, following the status quo and fighting really hard to keep the illusion? Mm. Or do I actually allow what is happening to wake me up, and then how do I find a way to respond to that in a way that is true to my experience without having to sanitize anything for anybody else?
Yes.
When we give ourselves permission to be truthful, honest, raw with our experience, then guess what? We open permission for other people as well. Mm. Because nobody really likes to fake.
No.
We fake because everybody wants us to fake.
Yes.
But with the moment you find somebody that is really open and honest and vulnerable and courageous, because vulnerability and courage come hand in hand, the moment you get somebody talking about their experience in a truthful way, then it's like a domino effect.
Mm. Yeah. Because the second thought I had on the way here, which so plays in, which is exactly that, is I've been thinking about this, and to be honest, this is a thought that came into my head because the stats that my oncologist basically gave me and my surgeon has is that in 15 years' time, 10, 15 years' time, I have a 75% chance of still being here. And I thought, if I, for argument's sake, if I only have 10 years left, you know, touch wood that I don't, but if I do, do I want to spend the next 10 years living in the same way I have, or do I want to go stuff it? I want to work in an environment that is compatible and nurturing to my neurodiversity, for instance. And do I want to stop trying to force myself to act in a way that is okay for neurotypicals?
Yes.
Or do I want, you know, or do I want to actually live a life that kind of, I don't know, I'm probably not saying this real, how do I want my life to look, and is it time to actually just look after myself and not try and do what I'm meant to do?
Yeah, because we are constantly, and I'm guilty of that too, and even after Jason died, I find myself having to recalibrate, realign constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's this thing of going, why am I being motivated by fear? Am I being motivated by what? And I constantly ask myself this question, what is the truest life that I can live? And am I going towards that?
Mm.
Or am I pulling away from that because I feel the pressure of the rhythms and the systems and the people around me? And it's really hard because it is like swimming against the current.
Mm.
But the beauty about having been struck by really, really difficult things, and COVID is one of them, is that it gives you the opportunity to start to think about, what do you want truly want for your life. And going back to the advice and going back into, you know, what, how we have to kind of hold the emotions of other people, well, we don't have to. And I think that for me, it was kind of really scary because, so my husband dies, I don't have family here. I have his family, you know, but it's not my sister, my mother. And I got two kids. I didn't have a job when he died because Jason was working two jobs so I could finish my master's. And so all of a sudden I have no money. And because of grief, my body was so struck that I felt sick all the time. I thought I had cancer. And so all of this is happening, and I felt like I needed to be nice to people because I didn't want to lose anymore. And if I was not nice to the people that were giving me dumb advice, I would lose a community. And it got to the point that I had to ask myself, yes, I do need a community around me, but what is the quality of that community? Are those people the people that I really want to be close to me at the time in my life when I'm so destroyed that I don't have the resources to continue supporting them and their distress? The answer was no. So I had to choose myself, and I had to choose my kids, and I had to make some really important decisions and put some really clear boundaries around me in terms of relationships. And I lost friends. And every single loss that you have, when you lose something important, it might be your health, a relationship, a loved one, any other loss brings up this volcano of grief all over again. And I thought, I either will face that head on, or I'm going to live a life that is less than what I could. And I cannot afford to do that because I have children that are watching me. My kids are watching me. How am I grieving? How am I what kind of modeling am I showing them? And so I decided I need certain kinds of friends that can withstand this beside me and hold their own discomfort, so that when they are with me, they are true support to me. And anybody else that cannot do that or is not willing to do that, I have to let them go. And I have some of them kind of drifted away. Some of them I ask not to come around anymore. And it was big losses for me. But ultimately, if I didn't do that, I would lose me in that process. And that was the one person that I could not afford to lose.
It must have taken a heck of a lot of strength, though. I mean, like you said, when you've already lost so much, it would be very tempting just to walk the easy path. Just smile and wave. Yep. Just smile and wave, boys. We use that in our family a lot.
What is the price? Because the truth is, we think that that's the easy path, right? But whatever path you choose, you're going to pay something. Nothing is free. It costs you something. And I think that the easy way that seems like, you know, yeah, smile and wave and be courteous or be nice to people or not really confront them, not really challenge what they're saying, put up with their bullshit, it costs you something deep, which is trusting in yourself, which is really allowing yourself to be the person that will hold you no matter what. It costs you your intuition. It costs you to listen to your inner wisdom. And when you start shutting those things down, they start to kind of petrify. And you know what? Nobody else is going to lay on that bed by myself with Jason's gap there. Just me. Nobody else is going to go through that chemo. Just you. You know? And so when we are grieving, we have to allow ourselves to grieve in the way that we need to. And the thing about that is that we don't know how to grieve. And everybody around us is telling us how to. But, you know, we need to stop asking for directions to places that other people haven't been.
Yeah.
We are going there, and we need to find our own map. We need to learn how to grieve our own way. And guess what? You're the only one that can figure it out.
It's so, I'm having one of those moments where you think, are you talking to me?
I am talking to you.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, Helen, this is talking to you.
Because I have had just the, so in 2016 was basically like this, it actually started in 2015 and this, I almost feel like this domino was flicked. And I had a really bad work situation and was basically bullied out of my job. My marriage ended, so I was jobless, husbandless. And that marriage ending created a huge amount. I mean, the grief was intense. I experienced it in my body. Like, it was this really, I started getting heart flutters.
Yeah, grief is a very physical thing.
Yeah, to the point where I had my heart tested and things, but I think it was almost like a broken heart. So that happened, and I just had no room or space to grieve in the way I needed to, because I needed to support myself, I needed to find a job, and it was really intense. And then as I felt like I was coming out of the really, really crappy stage, something else happened that was so painful that I was just altered after it happened. And so that happened, and then it was one of those things, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then I got cancer. And I really relate to what you were saying, where, as each of those things happened, friends would drop off and another friend would drop off. Because I think because I was so full of grief and so full of pain and loss and almost, I guess almost this shock that I can't believe these things have happened, I kind of felt like people couldn't stand being around me because I was so consumed at times with what had happened to me. And I couldn't be happy and positive about it because it was sort of like, if you tell me this has happened for a reason, I will punch you in the face.
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of this has happened for a reason. But I think I've often tried really hard to sort of recover and recoup, and if I can just get my life back into this normal sort of space, then I'll be okay. But I think it's becoming more and more sort of apparent to me that that's just not the way I can live. And then now understanding that I've been living with an undiagnosed neurological condition, it's sort of like now feels like the time to go, actually, how do you want to live with your life?
And I think throughout our lives we always have points like that, points in life where we are given the opportunity to wake up and go deeper and ask ourselves those questions: is this how I want to live? And we feel like it should be, because it seems like everybody else is doing okay doing that. And we look at the Instagram photos, and we look at Facebook posts, and we look at the people around us, and it seems like everybody's okay. You know, I'm an actor, and I have decided the acting has to be on stage. I cannot act in my life. And I see a lot of people acting all the time. And I do not buy into that anymore, because everybody's carrying grief, one sort of grief or another. I don't care if it's because your pet died. You know, grief is part of a human experience. And I don't understand why is it that we are not okay talking about it. And I don't understand why we're not okay allowing other people to talk about it or not to talk about it. Because if sometimes all you need to do is to be quiet, to be, I think grief needs to be witnessed. And that's what I think a lot of people don't get. I did not get that until I start getting lots of grief situations in my life. Like my, you know, we lost a baby, or my first baby died before I could give birth. And I lost my grandmother who raised me, and I lost my grandfather, and we lost Jason's father and Jason's mother. It's just one after another. And I think that really what we want is nobody to come and give us some good advice, because there are no words that can hold grief. Mm. All we want is for somebody to be there and see us.
Yes.
And to stand in it with us. We need somebody to witness our pain, because when people are able to witness our pain, then we feel that deep connection of soul. Mm. And that the strength that comes from that is not the strength of, oh, this is fixed or is fixable, because some things are not fixable. Mm. But it's, I can endure it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we really all want when we're in that space is we want someone to be in that space with us.
Yeah.
We want them to hold our hand and rub our back and just be there. Not try and fix anything. Not try and say, oh, if you do this, you're going to feel better. If you do that, if you take yeast, if you, whatever it may be, eat kale, go for a run, because we're not silly. I mean, at the end of the day, we can come up with that stuff all by ourselves.
We can Google it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
We just need someone to sit in our space with us.
Yeah.
And that's a... there's a graphic that I often use. I was actually doodling it while I was listening to you talking, Tatiana. I don't know if you can you guys see that?
Oh, I know
I know that one.
Yeah. What's it called again?
I don't know what it's called. I don't even know where I originally came across it, but it's something I've often used with children when I was teaching, and then other people to explain. I even used it with family members once to explain. So, okay, for listeners who cannot see what I just held up to the camera,
we'll find it and post it so we can.
We'll find it, or we'll draw it and post it. There's a little dot at the center, and the dot represents yourself or the person who is at the center of whatever is happening to them, be it cancer or losing a husband, losing a pet, whatever it may be. And then there's a circle around that, and in the area between the dot and the circle, that's where the people closest to that person or situation. Mm. So it could be their husband or wife, their children, the people who are closest to them, their very best friend. And then in the next ring of circle is the people who are a little bit further away. So it could be friends, slightly more distant family. And the idea of these circles is that you are all going to feel grief about the event that happened to that person in the center. When Tatiana's husband died, there were lots of people, I'm sure, who felt grief and loss and sadness about what had happened in a person passing away. Mm. But her and her children were that dot in the center, and it was them who were most affected. And they get to share their feelings with everyone who was further out in the circle. Mm. And everyone who was further out in the circle gets to share their feelings with people who are in the same circle or further out than them, but not the people who are inside, who are further within the circle, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's kind of hard to describe.
It's kind of like looking at it. It's kind of like you dump out. The person that is in the center gets to dump out their feelings, their grief, their anger onto all the other circle and spill it all out, right? Like pebbles, like you throw a pebble in the pond. And so that the circles kind of grow and grow. And the person that is in the center that's most affected by it gets, you know, carte blanche and can share and can talk about it and can cry and can throw a hissy fit or whatever to everybody else. So it's like you dump out and comfort in. So people that are on the outer circles, they cannot dump their grief onto the inner circles. They can just pour comfort in. And then they go and try to find support from outer circles. Does that make sense? So comfort in, dumping out.
It was a better way of describing it.
There you go.
Dump out. Comfort in.
Comfort in.
And as any of us who have been through anything major in our lives, as we have experienced through cancer, is people often look to the person who is actually experiencing it to comfort them and to make them feel better.
Yes, I had experiences after experiences of this. People, my husband was really loved by a lot of people. And he was just this great guy. And so there was a lot of people that was really hurting when he passed away. And so people would meet me in the supermarket, at church, in the mall, on the street, at a cafe. And they would dump their grief on me. And I had to actually say to a couple of people, I am not the person that can comfort you.
Yes.
And I know that you love Jason.
Yeah.
But I am not the person that can comfort you. Because you coming to talk to me about your feelings about Jason, guess what's going in my mind? I'm like, tough shit, deal with it. You didn't lose your husband.
Yes.
So I don't give a rat's ass about how Jason dying affected you.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't say that, you know, but I felt that. And it took me a long time to be able to kind of come to a place of going, I know that they are hurting too. But also it's like, don't come to talk to me about that. Don't come to talk to my kids about that. And I became overly protective with my kids. I just did not want people talking to them. Because also another thing that happens was, for me, my kids were at the center. They were at that dot. And I was the outer circle, right, as a mom. And so people would come to my kids and say, so how's your mom going? Not that great. And then, well, you need to be strong for your mom.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And what that did was that my kids, who lost their father, now had to pretend that they were okay with me. And that's so not okay.
No.
That's the worst advice for a child.
It's a very, it's a common narrative that people say to children, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, you're the, particularly if you'd had a son, you're the man of the house now.
Oh,
you
got to,
you know, support your mother. Oh, you just feel so terrible for those young boys who get that kind of narrative. And you're right, kids should never have to. They need to be allowed to grieve as well, even more so.
And grieve their way. Not like a grown-up is grieving, you know. Let them grieve their way. And some kids are going to express their grief. Some kids are not. Some kids are going to hold it all in. And so it's just allowing people to be. Give them space to hurt. Because if somebody had a broken leg and they were limping about, we would go and open the door for them. We would offer them a chair. But when you don't see the places there are cut and broken, why is it that we become so hardened against it? Pain is pain.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't think people know how to let people have feelings and emotions. You know, we can't. And I think that idea of holding space for people, so few people can do that. Because I think about the past few years and I've had loss upon loss upon loss, to the point where there were times after my marriage ended and then I had another very significant loss where I felt so full of loss that hurt, and I actually thought, I don't know if I can get through this, just because it felt so heavy and things, and it altered me. Like it totally changed me as a person. And then having cancer on top of that, there was part of me that went, are you kidding? You know, and it was almost, I guess there was this part of me that thought, is there not just like a limit?
No, there isn't. Let me tell you something.
A limit?
I'll tell you something that I have learned in my journey is that rock bottom has a basement.
Mm.
You know, you think you hit rock bottom, well, if you didn't find a basement, there is a dungeon. You can always go low, all right?
Yeah.
And but then what do you do when you're lower? Because there are people that will come around and try to silver line things for you and give you platitudes and find a reason why you are in that predicament.
Mm.
And the truth is just... there is no reason for some things in life.
No.
Life happens to you. And we can't go on, but we have to go on.
Mm.
So it's really, really important for us to actually learn how to hold ourselves, to honor our grief.
Mm.
And that's another thing I think that is really important to talk about, that there are lots of things that we cannot change when life turns sour and hits us in ways that we have waves and waves of loss.
Mm.
There's lots of things that are out of our control. And we are all of a sudden kind of like struck in the face with our own mortality, with our own lack of control, with there is no certainty for nothing, right? There is one thing that we can hold on to, and that is that I have right now this moment. I have this moment. So in this moment, how do I honor myself? Is it by just putting up with the ideas of other people that have never experienced what I am experiencing? No, I have to live inside my own skin.
Mm.
So I need to decide what is right for me in this moment, because this is the only moment I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I honestly, I'm just thinking, oh, it's like you can see inside my head.
Yeah, I feel like the reason that you came on tonight is just so that you can give us a pep talk.
Yeah.
Particularly Helen, I think there's some real messages in here.
Is this so, Helen? It is. I think I am at a bit of a, definitely am at a bit of a crossroad in life where... Yeah, I think I'm just sort of at this point where it's time to kind of shift and do things differently, for sure. Because COVID has really hit me again, and it has made me sort of think about, how do I want to spend my days? Who do I want to be around? What do I want to put my energy into? And it's, and I think for me, part of it was, you know, finding out that I have ADHD is that there are very few things that really keep my attention. And so when I find something that I really like and I'm really good at, I sort of think, how can I do this all the time?
How can I do more of this?
Yes. I want to do this all the time. And I just want to spend time with the dog during the day and make podcasts.
Yes. And there is no reason why you can't.
Yeah.
I think that, we have to be realistic too, because you are hit by something really hard in your life, and all this grief kind of just invades you without asking for permission, right? But life doesn't stop. The bills keep on coming.
Yep.
You have to go to work. You have to meet people that you would rather not. You have to do the taxes. You have... This is life, right?
Mm.
And I think the really important part in all of this is that allowing yourself to grieve is really allowing yourself to live.
Yes, yeah.
Because when you don't and you push it down, and then you keep yourself busy and you try to numb it and you try to deny, then eventually it's going to bite you in the ass, you know? But if you give yourself room to grieve, and if you stop putting all this pressure that you need to be okay, you don't have to be okay. Be okay with not being okay.
Mm.
Then when you embrace your grief, with every emotion, it's like waves. They will peak and then they will subside. So when you have those big moments of grief, wherever they take you, it might be in an emotional wave. It might be that your mind is just thinking about a million things at a time. It might be that you do need to go for a run. Mm. It might need to, that you just need to go and lock yourself in the bathroom and curl up in the fetal position and cry. And it might be that you are going to yell at somebody. I don't know what it is. If you allow yourself to grieve and to be true to that emotion without trying to pretend or sanitize or bubble wrap yourself so you're not bumping on other people and disturbing them, then when that emotion subsides, you can then tackle the mundane, necessary things of life. Otherwise, you can't.
Yeah.
And because we are human beings that need to function and pay our taxes and go to work and put gas in a car and clean the toilet, it's even more important that we give ourselves room and permission to grieve our own way, whatever that way is, and stop being so preoccupied with what other people are going to do and say. If they cannot handle your grief, they shouldn't be near you.
Mm.
For your own safety. They are not bad people. They just are not your people for such a time as this.
Yeah. Yeah. You've gone very quiet, Belinda.
I'm aware that my internet is slightly laggy tonight, and I don't want our listeners to be having to listen to me lagging. I am actually also, to be honest, really, really interested in just listening to Tatiana talk, which is unusual for me. I know, Helen, I am usually jumping up and down and saying a million things, but we have had some wonderful guests on our podcast, even though we haven't been going for very long. We have had some amazing guests, but I think, Tatiana, the things that you are saying tonight, I don't know, I'm a little bit speechless in that it's connecting on such a deep level with so much that is going on for me and for us. I think it would be fair to say.
Yeah.
They are things that Helen and I talk about relatively frequently. and for someone, and I was just about to say, for someone so young, I have no idea how old you are.
Oh, I'm an old woman. You have no clue.
Well, you're very well kept for an old woman, but you also seem to have a very, very deep level of wisdom.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you. I think that this is kind of like when we were talking about what is the price that you pay, the easy way also has this huge price, and for me the price would be I would lose touch with my intuition and my inner wisdom. And wisdom has a price.
Yes.
And the price is I'm gonna choose to hurt and allow that pain to unearth some things in me that otherwise would be buried. Would I choose to have wisdom? Would I choose to become somebody that thinks so deeply and so much? I think all the time. I never stop. I tire myself sometimes. I think that would I choose that if I hypothetically had been given the opportunity to go, do you want your imperfect, lovely life with your husband? Or would you like to go on this path and then you're going to discover things about yourself that otherwise you wouldn't? If somebody, God, the universe, Buddha, Oprah, had given me that choice, I'd be like, I'll take my imperfect, normal, ordinary, lovely life. Thank you very much. I wasn't given that choice.
No.
The choice I was given is, will I allow this to make me a bitter person?
Yes.
Or would I allow this to make me a person that I would like to be with for the rest of my life? So I kind of chose me. I'm choosing me every single day because no one else will.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. I feel
you are
most welcome.
I think we feel we feel wiser for this, don't we, Helen? This was what we needed. And we think that this podcast is for other people, but really, maybe it's just for us.
I think so.
Well, yeah.
Thank you for letting me voice out the things that are constantly in my head. So I really appreciate this conversation today.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us.
And thank you, our dear listeners, for listening. We broadcast every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. live on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/thecword. And you can get us across all major podcast apps. And also, we are running our Pledge Me campaign. So if you want to support us, we have the link up on our Facebook page. And we're fundraising so we can keep our show going for as long as possible so we can keep connecting with you cancery people. We don't like the word survivor here, so we've had to think up a new thing. And
we think cancer.
I'm kind of liking cancery people.
Is that what we are now? Cancery people.
Yeah.
So I have to ponder this one a little. I think. Do I want to be a cancery person?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to keep hearing cancery people, please support our Pledge Me campaign. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week. We'll be right back.